It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide on the 405. The pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks this afternoon. We've got some interesting people to talk with today. Now, you know, as I drive up and down the 405, lots of things I'm looking at. I'm really wondering, what is it that people are doing differently in this different marketplace? What is it that we've discovered about how to attract people, those people who are interested in buying what we want? The traditional way of getting in front of people is more interruptive than it is attractive. Lots of salespeople are being told by managers and owners of businesses who cut their teeth on business practices which were essentially interruptive, like ads on TV. You know, somebody's sitting there enjoying particular program, and all of a sudden here comes an ad that interrupts, but nevertheless, and maybe it's even a little louder than the regular TV, it interrupts something that was, somebody was doing for a while. It's the same thing with a lot of the techniques that we used to use that were very effective in sales. I mean, cold calling, interrupting. Cold calling, getting somebody on the phone and changing their whole focus for the moment to try to get them to focus on something else, and then giving them a lot of information. And of course, they were interested in getting a lot of information because the salesperson was an expert. He knew about the product, he knew about the solution, and his job was to educate the buyer in things that the buyer didn't really know about. Well, of course, that's changed dramatically now. It's changed because buyers don't want to talk to salespeople until they're ready. And what that means is when they have an issue, when they have something they want to talk about, then they get on the internet and they Google away, or they Bing away if they happen to be Bingers. But they Google away, and what they're really doing is that they are informing themselves. They're educating themselves about the problem itself, about the possible solutions, what's going on in the world, what could they expect to find for solution, who are possible providers, and what's the quality, the credibility of those providers, what are the comments, what have other people said about it, how have they rated various solutions, and they're really not even looking at people who are going to give you the solutions. What they're really looking at right now is what are the various solutions that are there. By the time buyers are ready to talk to sellers, they have educated themselves on the potential solutions for their problems. They've taken a look at what other people are reviewing those solutions, and maybe even finding people who are suggesting totally different solutions. Only then do they begin to look at providers, people who can provide those solutions, and probably before they even call in to speak with a salesperson or email in or fill out a form that says, please call me, they're probably talking to other people about various providers, looking at the reviews for all those providers, you know, trying to figure out what it is that they want. By the time they call, chances are they already even know what the range of price is going to be. So that means that the salespeople, when they get before we even go to the salespeople, if the company is not present in those conversations on Google, if they're not present, then that person is going to go someplace else. I've never found the results of a Google search to come up with an empty page. No matter what I'm looking for, Google is going to present me with a full page of links that I can go to. And they may or may not be as relevant as I want, and I may have to refine my search. But nevertheless, I will have places that I could go as a buyer and get into that conversation, to get something, a place where I can begin to find out what's going on. And so what I'm looking for as I drive up and down the 405, talk to people, interview them on the radio, I'm looking for what is it that they have done in their particular business to address the issue of the change in the marketplace, the change in the buyer's buying process. How have they changed their selling process to meet up with that? And as we begin to talk with companies that are very successful in this marketplace right now, we might learn something about what they're doing to be successful. And so one of the things that I'm very, very fascinated with is these companies that are moving very quickly in this marketplace. And one of those is Cerna Home Care. And we're very fortunate today to have Nick Pazant, who's the CEO of Cerna Home Care, with us to talk about what Cerna is and how it's addressing this home care, health care issue that's not going to get smaller but going to get much larger as the baby boomers, including me, get older and begin to need home care for themselves or right now for their parents. So let's welcome Nick Pazant to Pilgrim Talks. Nick, welcome.
Hi, Will. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about Cerna Home Care.
Sure. Well, Cerna Home Care provides in-home care and specialized health care services to a variety of folks, anywhere from an elderly person needing assistance in the home to somebody who may be on hospice or may be home from the hospital with a special need. And we have diversified and fill those niches where somebody with a specific type of illness who may need a specific type of assistance were able to provide that type of care.
Who is your audience? Who are your typical clients?
Our typical client is 65 and up. If you look at healthcare, the folks that are most in need of healthcare these days are the elderly. And there's a variety of diseases that are affecting the elderly, anybody the age of 65. For example, in Orange County, one out of every five people over the age of 65 is getting diagnosed with Alzheimer's or some type of dementia. That's a staggering number. Now you add Parkinson's, you add just general assistance issues and mobility issues to that, and surgeries, just typical surgeries. The numbers are, again, astronomical, and people need this type of assistance. And the hospitals and the healthcare centers and the rehabilitation centers address it to a certain point, but once they get discharged and released from that facility and have to go home, it's a whole other issue, and that's where we come in.
So tell us about what you do then when you come in.
We provide a variety of different services, from general assistance in the home. It could be helping mom or dad eat meals, get exercise, take their medications, sometimes go to the bathroom, shower or bathe, all the way up to nursing services where medical type services are needed in the home. It could be a hospice patient who is on, may have some symptoms and issues that a nurse needs to be at their side 24 hours.
Uh-huh. So now, what is your service area?
Our service area is Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, Dallas, and Phoenix.
All right. I'm looking at the Orange County 2012 Community Indicators book, and I was curious about how many people are, in fact, over 75 or over 65 in Orange County. It looks to me like it's, you probably know these numbers like the back of your hand, right? It looks to me like it's maybe 400,000 people.
Yeah, it's they say over 500,000 in our service area. And again, just looking at the numbers, just one out of every five of those folks over the age of 65, dementia is an issue. And again, you add all the other diseases and issues that the elderly folks are having now, those numbers, we're thinking a quarter of the 500,000 are developing dementia or a disease associated with dementia. So almost half that 500,000 is in need of health care, medical care, health care, and in-home care.
And in looking at those charts, those demographic charts, there's an enormous population behind that. I mean, we're really at the front edge of the baby boomers hitting 65, aren't we?
That is correct. Yeah, the crush on our health care system that's about to happen from now well into the future, the next 10, 15, 20 years, and a lot of people are talking, could bankrupt our government, could bankrupt the money that we are paying for these services. And it's going to be a real challenge, and it'll be very interesting to see how we deal with that.
Well, who's the payer for your services?
A variety of folks. On our nursing services, Medicare, all the way down to the long-term insurance policies. Some folks early on elect to get these long-term insurance policies and life insurance policies that will cover them in the event that they need assistance at a certain age. And I think that's a smart move to take one of these policies out earlier on, because this can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars depending on the condition. So some of it's out of pocket, some of it is provided by insurance, and then of course with the medical care services, that is covered by Medicare. And that is where the bulk of the cost is. That's why Medicare is, as everybody fears, will go broke.
Mm-hmm. You have various tiers of support, right? Tell us a little bit more about how what that is.
Well, we have levels of care, and it depends on, you know, you have a 75-year-old who may come home from the hospital and is pretty set on their own. They can do most of their daily living on their own. They might have a few issues here and there, but they might just need a small amount of help. Maybe they can't drive and they need somebody that's going to help them go to the store so many days a week, or go to the rehabilitation center or the senior center. Now, that graduates all the way up to somebody who is completely bedridden and maybe even on hospice. So the levels of care, we have three levels of care, and they tier from somebody who just needs some general assistance all the way up to somebody who needs full-on support.
I've seen lots of churches provide at least that first level of support, and there's also a number of nonprofits. I'm particularly familiar with it here in Laguna Beach, Sally's Fund. There's other places that provide transportation and that first level of support. Do you see that in the communities?
I do. There's a tremendous amount of support out there, from churches to family. There are groups that have gotten together and provide this at a very low cost. It's a very competitive space from a business standpoint. There are many, many, many providers of this basic level of care out there, primarily because it doesn't require a skill or a nurse to do it. And there are a lot of support mechanisms within the community and the family that can help provide it. But it is a very competitive space. And as the levels of care go up and the acuity of the patient, or the need for more serious services or higher levels of service, it does get less competitive. But it is a very, very competitive space.
Well, is your background in healthcare or is it more in business?
My background is more in business. The last 10 years, I've started to gravitate towards healthcare, but I'm primarily an entrepreneur. I like to say that it doesn't matter what you do, whether you're selling toilet seats or nuclear warheads, business practices are roughly the same. And if you're a good businessman, I think that you can build a good business in anything. Now, this industry does happen to be my passion, and I'm really happy that I'm in it, and I'm passionate about it. I enjoy it. I do it around the clock. It doesn't stop. Patients and families, they don't stop at 5 o'clock. Life keeps going on, and we have incidents and issues at 2 a.m. as much as we do at 2 p.m. So it's a big commitment, but it's something that I'm real passionate about, and I can go to bed every night feeling very good about what I do.
What's been the marketplace acceptance of your services?
Well, it's a very competitive space. Acceptance is, you're like any very competitive business. You've got to swim with the sharks. You can't go to business into business and expect that everybody's going to acknowledge you and do business with you quickly. It's you have to prove yourself, and you've got to work very hard to prove yourself. It takes some time. The community's got to see you perform, and they've got to see you in the space for quite some time. And they want to make sure that you're not a fly-by-night, you're not just coming in trying to make money, that you really do care about people, and that you're going to provide a service that gets people better. And that's the key. And for me, when I put this business model together, going through this with my own family, I realized that it would be very, very key for us to provide us a service and a business model that gets people better. And I don't mean better in the sense that somebody with Alzheimer's is all of a sudden going to remember their children again. I mean incrementally better every day. And there is a lot that you can do for a parent or a client or a friend to help them if they are inflicted with any of these diseases. And we build that into our program. We baked it in, and we are accountable to it, and we live by it. And anybody that we do business with, we have to affect their lives positively. We have to put them in a better place incrementally every day. And once we built that track record the first couple of years and really worked hard at it, and there's many ways we differentiated ourselves, the community starts to accept it. And people want to get better. People want to put their hands into a business or put themselves in the hands of a business that really cares and affects their lives positively.
You started back in, when did you open your doors?
Started in 2008.
And what's been your growth since 2008?
We have just about tripled every year.
Uh-huh.
We will do just close to $7 million at the end of this year. And the first year was a real struggle, as any entrepreneur knows. Second year was we started to get some traction, and from that point on, we really took off from there.
Now, the people who provide the services, are they employees of Cerna? Are they 1099?
They are employees, and I'm glad you asked that. It's real important when you hire somebody to take care of a family member. It's very important that there are some things that are in place, and one of them is workers' comp insurance. A contractor is in your home and gets hurt, obviously you're going to get stuck with the medical bills. In this industry, back injuries are very high because we're assisting people. So a contractor may or may not have their own coverage for workers' comp. We also have to have a bond. Anybody that comes in the home has to be bonded so that if anything were to ever end up missing, it's covered under the bond. And we also have liability insurance. So the only way those insurance coverages extend on to our people is if they're W-2 employees. So, yes, that is a good question. All of our staff is W-2 employees.
Now, is that true across the industry?
Primarily. In the industry, you'll see there are some contractors out there that are coming in with very aggressive rates, and they use contracted help and substandard help, if you will. And to do that, of course, they're having to cut corners, and one of those are contracted help.
Are there many independent people who are providing services?
Yes, there are.
So
yes, as I mentioned, yeah. It's a very competitive space. And from independents, there are websites that people can go to find independent help. There are friends, family, churches, organizations that find these people and help hook them up. So, yes, there are many independents.
I guess you can even go on Craigslist and find people, huh?
People do that as well.
Well, now, I'm curious about how large your organization is. Roughly how many people do you have who can provide service?
We have 180 active staff in the California area. Altogether, we have about 240 active staff.
And so how do you manage those people? I mean, they're it's not like they're all on the job, that they come to the office every day. Many of those people are going straight from home to home care situations, right?
Yeah. Part of the challenge, obviously, with any business model is managing staff, managing your costs and how you're productive. One of the challenges with this industry for us was managing productive staff that are primarily in the field. And we've developed ways that we feel are proprietary, that help us a lot. We've utilized technology. You know, these days, I look back to 50, 60 years ago even, which wasn't that long ago, and wonder how people managed companies like this. It's with all the technology we have now, it's really helped us tremendously in keeping track of people and helping people to be accountable, making their jobs more efficient. But managing an external staff is certainly easier today than it was because we have all this technology, but it is still challenging, and it is one of the things that I think we are very good at and has helped us be successful at what we do.
What are some of the technological tools that stand out in your mind as being significant, bringing significant improvement to management?
Well, I think, you know, I heard you say earlier, what are businesses doing in this environment today to grow and others aren't? And I think, number one, you just have to look at the climate today, what we have available. We have 75, 80-year-old people emailing and going on the internet. Now, I'm surprised at this because my mom is barely on the internet. My grandmother, God bless, she's no longer with us, but would have nothing to do with a computer. But it's changing. Every day it's changing, and I think that people are adapting to this technology, and it's helping just across the board. If you think about managing staff from a telephony standpoint, people can use their cell phones now to communicate with the office. They can clock in, they can clock out, they can take pictures, they can send forms back and forth. This wasn't possible even 10 years ago. It's possible today. The softwares that we have that are all, I don't know if you remember, even 10 years ago when I was in the technology business, we had these, you had to have these servers that hosted all your software. Well, now you don't have to host anything. Now that really gives you a lot of freedom. In the old days, you had to come into the office, you had to VPN or call in somehow to the computer, the server. Now everything's hosted remotely, and with internet access, you can have workstations all over the world just as though they were right in your office. That's a huge advantage in today's market to be efficient. And we take advantage of all the different core softwares that are out there, the mobility, even with patient monitoring. We can put monitoring in a home, and we can tell if that client or patient has fallen, if they're moving, if they leave the house, if their heart rate is not in an acceptable range, and even if their blood sugar is not in an acceptable range. Now, that's amazing.
And next you're going to tell me that they've had a little bit too much to drink, huh?
Well, I'll tell you, many of these adult children, they get the lashing from their mom and dad saying, look, I want some freedom, too. I realize I have to be monitored, and I have to have some assistance, but I want some freedom. So
let me alone. If I'm going to die, I'll die on my own, right?
That's exactly it. But I'll tell you, it is a push-pull. A lot of times they do agree, and they do agree to where the compromise between the family and the parent is as long as they're safe. So it's up to us to make sure that they're safe, but we don't want to intrude on their freedom too much.
It would seem to me that you are in as you move up the level of care, it would seem to me that to some degree what you're assisting the children to do, children of those older folks, is to help them to not wind up feeling guilty about poor care or lack of care.
Yeah, absolutely. The children feel guilty. See, in my dad's age, when my grandparents died, they all took turns. They were all over there every night. They all took turns, seven kids. These days, everybody's working, and these adult children are working, their wives are working, they're taking care of their kids, they have their own lives, and although they feel guilty, and they're there as much as they can, they are hiring care, and it's more acceptable. And even the care recipient is more accepting of hired care and the fact that they're going to have to be intruded on, if you will, with the doctor putting home monitoring devices and that type of thing in the home. So it's much more accepted now than it used to be. Now, it's still a pain relative to financing it. It's still a very expensive a proposition for families to have to deal with. But the expense of falling and getting hurt or potentially wandering out from the home and getting lost or, God forbid, getting hit by a car or something is even worse. So, again, it goes back to the compromise. You have guilt, you've got safety, and you've got a level of freedom that's going to have to be intruded on, and that's the compromise between everybody.
Well, it sounds to me like you have $7 million worth of people working it out for you.
We are working it out. I think that every day is a struggle. As I said, in this day and age, not only are we in a very competitive space, but everything's competitive now. The world has kind of melded together, and I think it's a extremely competitive environment no matter what kind of business you're in, and you have to utilize today's tools to their maximum. From marketing has changed drastically. The old days of print and television ads, and you're so focused now on the internet and getting the conversions and finding out how to get to your audience and how to provide that message, and it's everything's so much more instant now. This is a thing I have a little bit of a problem with. I'm not an instant gratification guy.
Well, let me stop you right there because I want to get into it. I want you to tell me a little bit about how you're going to market, but can you stick around after the break here and we'll talk more about that?
Absolutely.
Well, so let's take a little break here and let's hear from our sponsors.
Do you recognize them in your office? It's a common problem for executives and employees everywhere. There's John, over there. He just seems to have his own vision. Unfortunately for you, it's not your company's vision. Then there's Mary, who always seems to fall short of what's expected. You've got people that need to turn it up a notch if you're ever going to hit your goals. The never-ending cost of losing people and having to train the rookies. You constantly worry about losing key people you have become too dependent on. Extended Disc is designed for business owners, executives, and employees just like you. Extended Disc provides you with information to make better business decisions with confidence. Extended Disc helps you and your organization to be more profitable by avoiding decisions that result in expensive mistakes, wasted resources, and time. You see the problem. Extended Disc, the solutions you need to push performance and growth. It's time you made a call to Extended Disc for the solutions you need. Extended Disc, toll free, 1-800-257-7481, or go to www.extendeddisc.com.
Well, we've been talking with Nick Pazant, the CEO of Cerna Home Care. We've been talking about how this whole baby boom movement that's coming into needing home care right now, how that's affecting the marketplace, and how Cerna has been able to be accepted by the marketplace and begin providing a significant amount of home care in Orange County. So, Nick, let's talk a little bit about how do you go to market? I mean, from a business person's perspective, what have you seen that's different, and how are you positioning your company? What are you doing to take advantage of the differences?
Well, that was a real kind of learning lesson for me. I am sales and marketing has always been my background. And from reaching out and cold calling and knocking on doors to the most sophisticated type of marketing, it's always the whole breadth of this type of marketing, these types of marketing has always interested me. But what has changed is the electronic marketing. As I mentioned, 75, 80-year-old people going on the Internet. Now, I remember just doesn't seem like too long ago where we went to the Yellow Pages, and we opened the Yellow Pages up, and we found an ad down the street, and that's who we called. But now everybody's going online, including elderly people. So understanding the trends of what people are looking for when they go online, what keywords are they putting in? Where are they looking? How do you convert them? How are you, once you get them to either call or get a message to you, how do you approach it from there? All that was a significant part of building our business model, and I think part of our proprietary components of our business is how we go to market. So I can only share so much, but I will say, which I go back to what you were saying earlier, how are companies thriving in today's market? I think one of them is taking advantage of the way people find businesses and services these days. Are people still looking in that magazine or seeing a television ad or word of mouth or however people are telling other people about your business, really understanding it and then getting involved in the electronic part of it is key. And for us, it's been pretty key. Now, more of the traditional sense in our business is the industry. You have to build reputations with the professionals, and that is expensive, it's time-consuming, and it is challenging to have relationships with family doctors, physical therapy organizations, nurses. I mean, everybody that touches a patient or a client from the professional side of the business has to be marketed too. And it's challenging to find affordable ways to reach out and touch somebody who may need care to a professional who may be referring your services. And that is where I think we have made a big difference, some of which, again, I can share, some of which I can't. And I think in this market, which has been a tough economy, why you see some people, some businesses doing well and some businesses not. And it's the ones that are taking advantage of these new marketing techniques that I think are reaping the rewards.
What sorts of things have you found that are no longer profitable to use, no longer effective in terms of attracting people?
It used to be catalogs and mailers were. Now, there might be some industries. In fact, I've told every once in a while, oh, Nick, you shouldn't just give up on mailers. They still work. In some industries, they may. But if you look at the touch costs, and how effective a mail piece is versus an electronic piece, I think you'll find that the electronic piece, your dollars go much further, especially because you get more information back on them. Electronic pieces, catalogs, flyers, and mailers are pieces that I think are marketing, types of marketing or types of media that are going by the wayside, at least in my opinion. I'll have five people call me up and tell me that may not be true for them, but from what I'm seeing, definitely.
Yeah, well, I hear a lot of that from people who are in the printing and mailing business. I mean, they tell me that regularly, that yes, they're very strong still. I don't hear a lot of people who are using it tell me that it's very effective. So it's interesting to see. People have made a huge investment in printing and mailing. All the machines that printing and mailing shops have, they really have to work hard.
Yeah, that is true. There are still, look, companies have to, they've got to market in many ways, and right now, mailing and mailers are still one of the ways companies have to market. But I think once you look at what's more effective and what becomes more effective in the future, that may be one that becomes less effective. With the electronic piece or the yellow pages. I mean, if you remember, every company had to have a yellow page ad. I mean, this was 10 years ago, which wasn't that long ago. You had to have a yellow page ad. No, I don't even think anybody knows what a yellow page ad is anymore. I haven't ever had one.
I had a very good friend in yellow pages, and I just noticed the other day that he's now into inbound marketing.
Right. Yeah, it was in the old days. It was very critical to have the right yellow page ad. I don't know if you remember negotiating. Well, should I get a half page? Should I get a quarter page? What should it look like? Or people think I'm spending too much money, so did they go down to the small ones? I don't think anybody looks at a yellow page ad anymore. There might be some people that still use phone books, and forgive me if anybody's listening that is in that business. But the internet has taken over the yellow pages, looking up businesses. And the beauty of it is you can quickly see what people are saying about that business. In this day and age, your servicing your clients is so much more important because your client has so much power. All your client has to do is get on the internet and say the way they were serviced, and it will show up somewhere when somebody types your business name. That's a lot of power. And it's a lot of responsibility back on the business owner to make sure that you are providing a level of service, and that if you're not, it's going to catch up to you, and it's going to catch up to you very quickly. In the old days, it didn't catch up to you very quickly because nobody knew who that soured customer was.
Yeah, you could come in, sell some things, and get out of Dodge before people really started talking about what the quality was.
Right, and if they ever knew. If your advertising looked great and you were selling a lot of whatever you were selling, your salespeople Just kept selling it. Many times it took a long time to catch up to you, but with the internet now, we're finding it's catching up to people very quickly, and that's good. People have a lot more insight into who they're dealing with.
Yeah, and that's part of that initial question, isn't it? Not only how do I solve my problem, who can solve my problem, but what have been the experiences of other people who've had these problems?
Right, and that's a very interesting point there, because I find myself answering questions and learning more about my problem when I go on the internet and I research if I'm looking to buy something. And the education that you get from everybody, you know, blogging and talking about the product and how they did this and how they did that, sometimes you learn and you may even be buying an entirely different type of product just from the experiences of others. And that's powerful. And businesses have to use that to their advantage now. And we are very much aware of clients' experiences and how that affects the growth of your business and how those experiences can be used really effectively to grow your business.
All right. So what do you think the balance is between telling people, educating people, building credibility, and spilling your candy, giving everything away, free consulting?
Sorry, how do you balance giving information?
How do you know the proper balance is there? How much is too much in terms of a business model? Can there be too much information that you're giving away
on the internet?
Yeah.
Or any? Yeah, I think it depends on the business. If there's a tremendous amount of information that people get now for free, and I think that the impact to magazines, although, you know, I use the internet a lot, and I still like to get my hands on a magazine. I like to hold them. I like to turn the pages and see the pictures, and I don't think that the magazine industry will necessarily go away, but the industries or the businesses that deliver information have mostly been affected, and they've had that decision to make: how much do we give versus charge for? And what the information providers have found is that they give quality information away that's drawing people to the site, then they're going to make that money by having the eyeballs on the site, having the customer at the site. For us, we provide a very valuable service. The more, and that can't be given away, if you will, with information. But we find that if we give more valuable information away to help people to understand what they're dealing with when their husband, wife, or father, or mother now has Alzheimer's, and there's a whole new world to deal with, how they're better equipped to handle it. We want to give as much information as we can away for free for them to understand it and deal with it. And it just draws back to when they do need a certain level of care, that they'll call us for service.
So in a real sense, this information that you're giving is also a conversation, isn't it?
Information is absolutely conversation, although it's not necessarily engaging conversation. To have somebody, to provide information and draw people in and have ongoing conversation with them, at least from an electronic standpoint, is probably not feasible. But delivering information to the community is very engaging, and it's very rewarding, and the community gets a lot from it. And at that point, yes, once you've started to engage by delivering useful information to the community, then absolutely the likelihood that they're going to do business with you grows substantially.
Well, do you provide places for people to leave comments on your pages where you're providing information?
We do. We do, and we also provide places in the community for people to talk and discuss with other people. We have had roundtables with certain family members that don't necessarily know each other that we've picked just to talk and talk about what they've experienced and how other people have dealt with it. So we're very big on talking about the problems that are arising with these families, because it's a real tough thing. For example, when you find people with more frontal lobe dementias, your social filter is in your frontal lobe. Now, we have family members, say a father who has led a family for many, many years, has been a pillar of his community, who has never said a cuss word, all of a sudden being belligerent and doing childlike behaviors and embarrassing the family at the dinner table or in front of people, making lewd comments to a waitress or somebody in public. This is very, very difficult for a family to deal with this. Can you imagine 80 years of growing up, an 80-year-old father, him raising you your entire life, and all of a sudden his behavior changes in the drop of a hat to something that you just had never imagined? That's a very hard thing for families to deal with, and for us it's very important that we provide an outlet and a platform for them to discuss these things and talk to other family members and us as service providers about how to deal with these issues, and even resources. The one great thing about Southern California is we have a great resource, many resources within the community, and they're everywhere. And I just encourage families to take advantage of them, because they really do help, and it's not something that you can take on by yourself. You really have to have that support.
What I'm beginning to pick up from a conversation is that people buy not just because of the service you provide, but because of the conversations that you facilitate in so many ways.
Absolutely. In this, particularly in this field, we know that people need a level of support, and we give them certain levels of support, and we know that they will lean on us to provide those additional levels of support when that comes about. Sure.
I heard you say something that's very interesting. You said, we provide this information to the community. That's interesting. I had never really thought about the Internet is providing information to the community. I always thought about it as providing information to one person or a sequence of one persons.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how community is becoming more and more a part of the Internet. You know, when you connect everybody, the only commonality that these that all these connected people start to develop and start to have is community. We see a lot of community within the, let's just say Alzheimer's, for example. There's a tremendous support group within the Alzheimer's Network. There's a lot of community there, and the Internet has really taken advantage of that, and it's drawn a lot of elderly people to the Internet for some of these resources. So community is key, I think, in any business, and especially in the business that I'm in. And using the Internet for community is even more key.
Well, do you have salespeople who actually sell the services?
We do.
And are they active in community forums, either on the Internet or in a, you know, off the Internet?
For me, and this is always a line we have to walk, but I encourage my salespeople to always be involved in the community, to network within the community, understand the community, and from there, providing, you know, selling and marketing in traditional ways. You got to build a platform, you got to understand the community and work with the community, and then it's a traditional sales and marketing go from there. So, yes, in the healthcare business, you'll find that just about every successful business is very involved in the community with their marketing.
Now, do you notice a difference in, you mentioned traditional sales, do you notice a difference in the way the salesperson, the successful salesperson in healthcare today approaches a potential client? Is there a difference from what they did 15 years ago?
Not necessarily. The salesperson has to do, as a, in the healthcare industry, really has to align themselves with the healthcare professionals. And that is a lot of knocking on doors, face-to-face, starting a conversation, developing a dialogue, developing a relationship, which takes time. It's challenging. And that's one part of the healthcare business that has not changed. To meet and understand the healthcare professionals, it's really a traditional marketing style or type that has been around for eons, and that hasn't changed. The drugs reps, pharmaceutical reps, they've been doing it for, you know, many, many years, and they still do the same thing. They go call on doctors, they knock on the doors, they sit on the couch and wait till the doctor will see them for a few minutes, they mention their drugs, and off they go to the next doctor. And that's pretty typical of the healthcare sales cycle.
All right, so that's building professional relationships. Is that what your salespeople exclusively work with professionals? Are they generating sales from the end users themselves?
Our
children of the end users.
Our salespeople build relationships within the medical and healthcare professionals and the community. So their corporation, if you will, manages attracting the end user, the client. Now, keep in mind that working with the healthcare community, ultimately, we're going to get referred that client, that end customer.
So, sounds to me like you have three sources of customers. One would be a referral from a healthcare professional. One would be not a referral necessarily, but somebody's become aware of you from a community engagement or a forum or something like that offline. And the third would be somebody who went online, participated in the conversation or got information from you, picked up the phone and called or filled out a form and said, call me.
Potentially. You know, our hearing about us is, I'd say there's a dozen different ways that we have to be aware of and to market to. Whether they might hear about us on the radio. They might hear about us from a friend who used us and really liked us. They might hear about us from their doctor. So we have to, when you provide a service to the community, you have to touch so many different aspects of marketing. So I wish there were only three ways. It'd make my job much easier, Will, but there's probably 10 different ways that a client will reach us.
And do you track those 10 different ways?
We do.
So you know what percentage of your $7 million of business is coming from what which sources?
We do.
Excellent, excellent. You know, I'm really impressed with the you know, a company that can see 300% growth every year for 4 years now, right?
Yes. You know, I was in the technology business, and I grew for four straight years at about 200%. And I have people ask me all the time, how do you grow a business? How do you grow a business? When people see you grow a business, particularly in two different, completely different industries, everybody wants the magic. They want to know, what did you do? What did you do? What's the secret? And I really wish I could tell them a secret, but I tell everybody the same thing. You work your butt off day in and day out, and you live your business. That's the one thing that I see a commonality with people that have high growth amongst many businesses that didn't just get lucky and hit a hot streak, that really have a continued level of success and growth across possibly many different platforms or different industries. And it's really just hard work and focus. You know, I live my business day and night. I answer the phone for a client at 3 in the morning. I put my cell phone right next to my bed. I'll never not take a call from a client who needs me or an employee who needs me. And I live it, and I love it. I love what I do. Growing a business is it scratches every itch that I could have ever had. And if you don't live your business and you don't drive your business and think about it every day, just like Henry Ford said, you got to think about your business night and day. If you don't do that, then you're probably not going to see the kind of growth that you really want out of your business. If you give your business 100%, it'll give you back 100%.
It sounds to me like you're a pretty happy guy.
Yeah, I always want more, Will. but yeah, I am a happy guy. I like what I do a lot.
Good. Well, I'd like to talk to you sometime a little bit more and find out what that more is. That's curiosity.
Great.
Well, now listen, we've got a couple of minutes left. What would you like to leave the audience with? Remember, the audience, it might be today's audience, but it might be somebody 2 or 3 months from now picking it up on iTunes.
Right. I'd like them to know that when you have challenges within your family, whether it's a grandparent, a parent, a spouse, you have a lot of resources out there, and I always encourage everybody to reach out and not to be afraid to talk to somebody, to bring a professional in and give some opinions and some advice. We do that free of charge. We do it for everybody who calls us and you know wants us to possibly provide services or information. And it's out there. You know, there's a lot of things happening to us now. A lot of changes. We're living to be a lot older than we did before, and we have these environmental impacts that are causing these different diseases and issues that we'd never seen in the past, and they have to be handled differently. And sometimes people are it's hard to accept that, and they don't necessarily know where to turn. And as the baby boomer generation gets older and the crushing costs of healthcare get worse, we have to remember we've got to be a healthy society. We've got to watch what we eat. We can't necessarily be obese because it's going to cost every one of us. If we smoke, it's going to cost every one of us. We've really got to start taking responsibility for our own health, and that's the only way that we're going to get this thing under control.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And now let me push you a little bit. As a 65-year-old myself, I don't think elderly starts for another 10 years.
I would agree with that. I wouldn't call you elderly. But but there are some things happening earlier now. We're seeing signs of Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, MS, Lewy bodies. These things are starting to develop at an earlier age, and they think that some of this, although there is genetics involved, some of this is just due to our environmental issues. What we're eating, the level of unnatural or non-organic substances that we eat, touch, feel, that are around us, they think might be affecting that. But from 65, you really got to start being concerned about that.
Well, I would say continue to be concerned about that. Listen, thanks a lot for being with us. This is wonderful, Nick. Really appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, I look forward to not talking with you for a long time.
No problem, Will. You take care of yourself.
I'll talk to you, but not to your people for a long time. How's that?
There you go.
Excellent.
All right, Will. Thank you very
much. There we have it. Lots of people, you know, out of this 3 million people in Orange County, there's a significant number of people right now who are talking and needing assistance. And I'm sure that Nick would appreciate anybody that needs to talk to him. You can talk to him at Cerna Home Care at cernahomecare.com. And as we, you know, as we see this baby, this bump, this elephant bump coming through, if you remember the Little Prince, that snake that had the elephant and the elephant just moved through that. Well, we've got that same kind of thing going on now with the baby boomers. And as some of the one of the front members of the baby boomers, I'm looking back there and seeing a big bulge coming, and there are going to be a lot of people who need to have health care. Keep Cerna Health Home Care on your take a look at them. You might need them. So there we have some very interesting things going on in Orange County, and it's interesting to me that behind this health care is a very strong entrepreneurial business person who is taking a look at how to provide in the most effective and efficient way access to home care and using some very interesting marketing patterns to help people get in touch with those solutions that they need to have. So there you have it from the Pilgrim on the 405. Looking forward to talking with you again next week. So make it a great day.
You've been listening to the only show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal Pilgrim on the 405.